Welcome to issue 216 of Critical Encounters, a podcast about Marvel Champions, a living card game by Fantasy Flight Games. Here, we take a good look at that most critical piece of the game, the encounter sets. We'll discuss those poorly understood characters unfairly labeled villains, and their various plans to shape humanity and benefit the planet, as well as those so-called heroes intent on thwarting them. I'm one of your hosts, Scott, and with me is Steve.
Hello, Scott.
And Daniel.
I want to say welcome back, but I think this is your first time in the lair.
It is my first time officially in the lair.
Yeah.
And welcome. I can say that the drapes are quite nice.
Thank you. We argued a lot about them, but I think we came to the right decision in the end.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. One is wont to do with drapes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for being here, Scott. What a delight to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, Daniel, you want to say welcome back because it was just a couple issues ago that Scott cashed in one of his Patreon supporter rewards and recorded an intro and an outro, and he joined me for a Twitch that was just, hey, you want to Twitch with me, let me know. And we've had some other entries from Scott, and he's out there on the Discords.
That's
and
right.
Just a staple of the community at this point, so it's great to have you actually in the lair, sitting in Mike's seat, because you'll notice Mike's not here again. But we're getting close to the point where he will return, so.
Yeah. Thanks for all you do, Scott. It's great to have you here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. Thank you all for being the wonderful villain overlords that you are and presenting us with this wonderful show week after week after week.
You got a little something on your nose there, Scott. Anyway. So since this is your first time in the lair, let's get to know you a little bit. Tell us your Marvel history, where you come from, just in Marvel in general.
So Marvel in general, I think my first introduction to Marvel really was, I think, with most folks, the X-Men animated cartoon and sort of the Spider-Man cartoon and stuff like that when I was younger. Watched those a lot as a kid, at least when we could catch them, right, on the TV. And I really fell in love with it again later after the MCU, and I found comics on my local library's like digital library, and I was able to start reading through, and I absolutely fell in love with Miss Marvel and Doctor Strange and She-Hulk, and started reading through a lot of those comics, and eventually got into Marvel Unlimited, and now I read a lot more comics on there, and I can really go through and read the full story arcs of all these different characters. And that really got me interested in Marvel, and that I probably kicked up about 6 or 7 years ago when I really started reading the comics more.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so I'm kind of a young Marvel lover.
New, yeah. Okay, new. Cool. I like that.
Too
I like
new. That. Both are probably true.
Yeah, I like that the library has them. That's great.
Yeah, it was really cool. I was surprised.
Well, now I'm gonna have to check my library's app. Although, being ignorant is sort of my point in this show, so I'm not sure I'm gonna read those.
You can't get too overeducated.
My God, what if I actually knew a thing?
The English professor doesn't want to read stuff. It's too many pictures for Daniel. Too many pictures. Yeah.
Too many pictures. Exactly. He feels too much like it's cheating.
Back in the day when I did kind of read comics or thought about graphic novels, I would find that I would read all the words and then never know what was happening because I never looked at the pictures.
So, yeah.
I
get that a little bit.
I feel like I'm missing half of it.
I read a lot of manga for a long time. So I was a bigger fan of manga and like Shonen Jump type stuff from college on for a long time. So it took me a while to loop back around to American style comics in my sort of reading repertoire.
Got it.
But I enjoy them. Now I love them. They're very, they remind me of classical mythology, which I'm a classicist by training. I studied Latin and ancient Greek, and it takes me back to sort of these mythical archetypes and heroic stories and journeys and
absolutely
how they represent, they can represent the real world in these sort of smaller scenarios and bring out things that we struggle with and show how at our best we handle things and stuff like that. It's very cool. I love the idea of the hero and presenting them in the medium. So it's really fun to read them. I really enjoy
the hero.
Them.
You like the idea of the hero? What?
I mean, the villain. Well, I mean, aren't so-called, right?
Okay.
Remember, Steve, everyone is the hero of their own story.
That's right.
Oh, all right. I'll let it slide this time because you're new.
I mean, come on. You know, Thanos thought he was doing the right thing.
Okay. That's all that. Where you are. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. we can demote you.
Were these straps on the chair when I sat down?
They sometimes appear.
Yeah.
I won't say it's randomly. So Scott, tell me a little bit about your fun with the game. Who's your favorite villain? What hero do you love to see get crushed? Talk about your game experience.
Yeah, so this is by far my most played board game. I love playing it and getting it to the table. I think my favorite villain, and this is it's because most people hate this villain, and he is absolutely one of my favorites. And partially, I guess, maybe because he crushes so many people, but that would be Loki is my absolute favorite villain in the game.
Wow.
I love how trickster it feels. And I don't necessarily love the Infinity Gauntlet, and I know that that's the criticism that a lot of people have, and it makes him extra fiddly because you're having to pull stuff out. But the way that he's constantly pulling side schemes, and then when you defeat the side scheme, it like flips your Loki. And you can't always guarantee that, like, well, I want to stun him because he's not stalwart. But, oh, hey, guess what? He's going to flip to a different Loki, and now he's stalwart. You thought he wasn't going to attack, but now he is, right? Like, he keeps you on the edge of your seat, and so you really have to play kind of smart. And also, it makes for a really fun game, as far as I'm concerned. I really enjoyed playing Loki every time I play him.
Do and you have to use the Infinity Gauntlet?
Yeah, so in my opinion, you don't. There are different like variations on it. Often the way I'll play, it definitely makes him easier, is you just don't play with it at all. And anytime it tells you to give yourself an Infinity Stone, I just deal myself another encounter card.
Okay.
Yeah. I do a full encounter card because it should have the effect of like bringing out a minion or putting threat on the scheme. Sure. And a boost isn't necessarily going to do that. So I just give myself an encounter card. And he's hitting for less because he doesn't have the gauntlet.
Yeah, you could just retheme the gauntlet Loki's trickster magic, and
yeah,
every other turn he does some weird trickster thing to you, and then there's the theme, and you're fine, right? Like,
yeah.
Oh, it's not about theme; it's mechanically annoying.
It's just one extra card. Anyway,
I think it was.
Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it's great. I do love playing him without it. I have done that repeatedly. It's a little bit easier to set up. I don't always want to have to mess with all the extra pieces, and it makes the game way longer when you play with the gauntlet, and sometimes I'm trying to play a 30 or 40 minute game. So,
sure. Do you play primarily solo?
A lot solo. My wife plays with me sometimes as well, and what we do, we'll both play double-handed, so we'll play a four-player game.
Oh, wow.
Each of us playing two heroes. I used to play when I lived in Kansas City. There's an amazing group out in Kansas City that meets at the local tabletop game. It's like a tabletop, and the building next door is a cafe, a gaming cafe, and they share space. So we would meet there. They do host a lot of events. So Monday nights, it's like 8 to 12 folks would show up to play Marvel Champions.
Sweet.
That was a great, great group of folks to play with. So I played a decent amount of multiplayer as well, but most of my games are probably solo just because they're that much faster and it's easier.
Daniel, I think you and I are jealous every time somebody says, my wife plays with me.
Oh,
oh. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a blessing.
It's, sure. No. Yeah. You're right, Steve. I do feel a little sting. Yeah,
a little bit of me dies every time I hear somebody else say that. So, all right. Well,
I'm happy to contribute to your suffering.
Thank you.
my favorite heroes he smashed. I mean, you got to pick Iron Man, right? I mean, clearly,
thank you.
He's so egotistical. I do love seeing him get absolutely crushed. I don't play him that often, though. I'm far more likely to play Hulk or Cyclops. Hulk is probably my most played hero.
Oh, that's cool.
So he gets crushed a lot.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Now, I don't think I've seen anyone play Iron Man in years. So it's hard to, it's sort of hard to resent him like I did before, Steve.
Yeah, I know.
Next game we play, Daniel, I'll bring Iron Man.
Okay. So, okay. Oh, I will do whatever I can to be unhelpful.
Okay.
Like more than what I normally play. Yeah.
I'll bring everything and I'll share one thing with you. So you can.
I'm gonna really just like there it. Are ways to grief your friends, right? So I'm gonna bring one of those. First of all, I'll choose a hero whose nemesis set really hurts everybody. Yeah, I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
I'll come with the anti. Someone will help me make the anti Iron Man.
Well, isn't it Ant-Man's nemesis set that blanks out all tech attachments and like can just kill Iron Man if he's relying on the health boost?
Okay, I'll suck it up and play Ant-Man. He's not my favorite. But I'll do it.
Play him in the pool aspect so you can really be in Wayne.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, what are we doing tonight before we talk more about this? This sounds like a terrible experience for me.
What's on your mind tonight, Steve?
Oh, on my mind. Excellent. Yes. Well, what is on my mind is another Patreon thank you. So here in the lair, we want to extend our true appreciation to everyone who is a patron on our show. And tonight we want to give a nice big villainous thank you out to Tim A for his support.
We need Tim A. Yeah.
He's out there listening to the show, fighting the bad fight. And as a reward, we've developed, you know, we want to include him in the inner circle here. So we've developed a brand new set of cybernetic helmets, like a la the Reavers, right?
Well, that seems like a great thing.
Yeah. They're still kind of being tested.
Oh.
The last few tests were a little messy. I don't want to use the word exploding. I don't want to use the word imploding. We'll just sort of call it like a big mind expanding experience with these helmets. Oh. So anyways, what I want to do is I would like to promote Tim A to like beta tester into our new cybernetic enhancement helmet division. Thanks, Tim.
Wow, thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Tim. Awesome. Prepare to have your mind blown.
Yeah.
Steve, Scott, if I may, I actually have something on my mind tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
And it kind of leads into my story for you. All right.
Take it now, away.
Steve, remember when Caleb was on and we talked about Nimrod?
Yes.
And you and I brought up how when we were kids, if you called someone a Nimrod, that was sort of an insult. You're kind of calling him an idiot, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, would you believe it? We said something along the lines of like, I wonder where that comes from. And someone knows, Steve, and they wrote to us.
Oh, excellent. Now,
you know emotional support Honey Badger, right?
Oh, yeah. He's in charge of the Badger stables, the Honey Badger cavalry corps.
So,
yeah.
So he said, can I quote him? He said, so I'm still a bit behind, but I'm just listening to the Caleb episode where you're all wondering how Nimrod came to mean idiot. And the answer is Bugs Bunny. Did you guess that, Steve? Because I did not
know that. I did not know that.
Bugs Bunny called Elmer Fudd Nimrod sarcastically, comparing him to the biblical mighty hunter. But because a lot of people didn't know who that Nimrod was, and Elmer Fudd was a bit of an idiot, it became slang for someone stupid.
Precisely what I was wondering, Michael Nimrod.
Wow.
Hey. Yeah.
That strikes me as 100% true and not apocryphal in any way. I bet that's it.
Yeah, I believe this is Mighty Jim from Card Game Cooperative who said that. I believe that is true because we did have a few other folks comment on like our Facebook page or Discord, and I had to go look it up, and it said so on Wikipedia, so it has to be true.
I'm going to now get all my information from Mighty Jim.
Oh, okay.
He will be my personal Wikipedia.
Well, and he's British, so if he says it in his accent, then it has to be, right? It just sounds
spoken to him and with him, like, I don't doubt a single thing he says because of that.
Yeah, it can't be wrong.
Can't be wrong. Yeah. Thanks for the info, Jim.
And everyone else that chimed in.
Yeah.
Steve, we have a Facebook page?
Yeah, we have a Facebook page. You can just...
I'm kidding. I just don't go there that often, I guess. Not to see that everyone chimed in. How did I miss that? I would have been looking for it.
Anyway. We have a nice little group of folks who will chit-chat sometimes or offer comments or, yeah.
Yeah. So thanks. I mean, I feel like I get a little, like, Facebook sends me a little message telling me that that happened. I wonder how I missed this time. All right. Well, I wanted to bring up that story also, guys, because it's biblical and I'm going to be getting biblical.
Oh, all right.
Because tonight we're talking about the origin story of Magog.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Scott, as a classicist, I imagine you've actually heard of Gog and Magog and that stuff.
I have some. More often in Marvel than in my reading of the scripture.
That's interesting. Our Magog, if I'm being honest, isn't really that interesting. Okay, he doesn't appear very often. And yeah, he's all right. There's something funny about his story. I'll get to that in a bit. But what is fascinating to me is the history of that name Magog. So that's where we're headed tonight, guys. All right.
Okay.
We will, of course, talk about Mojo's hunter, the fearsome bearded thug Magog. But I want to go back all the way back to where I first encountered the name in the book of Genesis. Okay. That is Magog as a name is Genesis, old fellas. That's somewhere around 1100 BC that writers were making mention of Magog. Now, the name initially was that of a character. But then it soon became kind of a more expansive term for a tribe or a nation. And that's actually how the Marvel writers drew from the initial source that I kind of find so fascinating. For like Magog is a symbol of something, right? Or began to take on a symbolic meaning. But let's start at the beginning and trace Magog from past to present. Our road will take us from Genesis to Ezekiel to the Book of Revelations to DC Comics. Are we allowed to even say that here, Steve? And finally, at long last, to the cinematic Mojoverse we know and love. So, you guys ready?
Yeah,
ready. You have any questions? Any questions to start with?
I love that we got Nimrod and Magog, and here we go. So, yeah, we're getting both.
It all goes back. All right. Yeah. So we first encounter the name Magog as the second of seven sons of a man named Japheth. And you'll find him in Genesis book 10, something about the tribe of nations. There's a big chart that the Bible has. Anyway, now, like other groups of sons in the Bible, like you're probably familiar with the 12 tribes of Israel, they stem from Jacob's children, right? So the name Magog soon became representative of a people or a region. So like the sons of Japheth became the patriarchs of other lands and other peoples. All right, so it seems like they settled in Western Turkey, and which was in ancient times referred to as Lydia. Now, by the time we get to the book of Ezekiel, Magog has become a name synonymous with evil and opposition, like the children of Cain or something. The offspring of Magog were pagan evildoers working against the righteous. So already you can see how, you know, one could take a Marvel villain with that name and it would resonate because, you know, tyranny and violence set against justice and light, that kind of thing. So starting with the prophet Ezekiel, the name Magog begins to make its way into apocalyptic traditions of Judean prophecy. So soon here as well, we're going to get the double association of Gog and Magog. Sometimes father, son, sometimes Gog is the leader of the land of Magog. Now, interestingly, the land of Magog, which may have started in Turkey, as we've said, becomes a kind of universal stand-in for outside forces looking to oppose whoever is narrating our story. Magog is a land of outsiders, encroachers, and is therefore villainous. Gog and Magog appear and take this role from all sorts of sources, from the Quran to Irish folklore. Their last mention in the Bible comes from the book of Revelation, where father-son duo Gog and Magog rise up and join Satan's army. So what we have here, that is the association of a name with opposition and evil, as I said, and that's what matters to us contemporary readers. We're primed for Magog to be a bad guy. All right.
Oh, that's a lot.
There's a lot going on, right?
That's heavy.
I thought it was like a gladiator, but okay. Like, that's a lot more.
Well, now we get to Magog the Gladiator.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Now, our Magog also has a dad in the comics named Gog. Did you know that? They're often found together in the comics. Now, Steve, I'm going to ask you this trivia. Where do you think we are introduced to Magog? Where does he first appear in Marvel?
Knowing nothing about him, I'm just going to say he's in something with Mojo.
He's in Long Shot number 11.
Oh.
Which came out in 1985. So I guess he's what? Kind of middle aged for us? Right? The 80s?
Yeah. All
right.
Yeah, sure.
But his story is kind of weird.
Right.
So when you fight, not surprisingly, this may astound the two of you, I didn't know about Magog the character very much. So what I know of him is in this card game that we play where he's a, what I thought was sort of a bearded dwarf thing, right? Kind of a goon.
From the art. Yeah.
From the art, yeah. Right? I don't know. And he just seems like he's like, he's kind of rhino-ific.
He does look like a Warhammer fantasy dwarf with the mohawk and the beard. Mm-hmm. And the,
yeah, he does.
Yeah, he's a little over the top. So I'm like, okay, he's just a goon, right? But in any case, when we first meet him, Mojo sends him to, he's a hunter for Mojo, as I said. His first job is to go and get Longshot. Now, to affect this, you might think that he would just sort of break down a door and like grab him by the throat and bring him over. No. There's something kind of sneaky about this Magog. It's a fascinating strategy. He disguises himself as a cute little creature and befriends Longshot, who calls him Pup. What? I'm not making this up.
How does he make himself cute and little?
Comics.
He looks like a mix between a dog and like a Chinese dragon.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's okay. Yeah, he's not very big. He's kind of cute little puppy thing. So now here's the thing though, Magog, and I wouldn't have gotten this from our game necessarily either. One of his superpowers is that he absorbs magical energy. And when he does this, he grows bigger and bigger and meaner and meaner. Okay. So eventually he's not a little pup anymore, because you know who Longshot's best buddy is in 1985, Steve and Scott? It's Doctor Strange.
What?
So, and they use lots of magic, and Magog absorbs, and soon they're going to have to like figure out what to do with this guy. Now, Longshot doesn't want to hurt his little buddy pup, but Strange is like, dude, this thing is attacking you. So finally, all the magic from Strange and Longshot, they make Magog grow and grow and grow until he's ready to burst. Then he announces his true name, Golden Magog, just as Longshot throws a knife in his belly and he literally explodes.
Okay. All right.
So I'm sad to tell you, fellas, that Magog's dead. He dies horrifically in a pool of his own magical goo.
Oh. Yeah.
He's dead.
Aww. Is he like dead for real?
Oh, did I hear you say really? Is that what you're saying, Steve?
Yeah, really? Is he really dead?
Of course he's not dead.
Oh, good. Okay.
No. He appears later in like some ex-babies thing where he's trying to steal babies. And now he's stuck with Mojo in the sewers under the Empire State Building in some other universe. And they're waiting for Mojo to make another like TV show.
Oh, boy.
Mojo was defeated and sent to some like prime negativity plant. I don't know. You know this stuff, this nonsense. Okay. So he was sent to some other dimension or something, and Magog is with him.
Okay. Pup. I'm going to need some photos
so
of this pup.
I will only be calling him Pup in the game from now on.
Okay.
You
know,
I thought it was interesting that the pictures of Magog don't look anything like the Magog in our game. And in fact, the Magog in our game looks very much like his dad, Gog. So I was a little confused which one is Gog and which one's Magog.
That's an interesting question. And two, it could have something to do with DC Comics, Scott. And I mentioned that at the top. So in the 90s, DC Comics had a villain named Magog. Same spelling, same everything. And the character was kind of like a joke and sort of a prank on Marvel, because DC was trying to copy what they thought was like this over-the-top, crazy art, anti-heroes are everything kind of whatever that Marvel was going through in the 80s and 90s. So they're poking fun at that, both the art style and the story development, by making their own Magog, who is just like crazy looking. And he kind of looks more like Loki almost. Like he's got a big horned helmet and stuff like It's yeah. So he was a bad guy that DC made like 10 years after Armagog showed up. Yeah, but I'm not even sure that DC even knew about this Magog, because it has nothing to do with him. Like, no story arc is similar, nothing.
So, yeah. Okay. Well, and then the Magog artwork in our game is commissioned art. So okay. Somebody, one of our designers, wrote a design brief. Now, this was Tony Fanchi's first set.
Yep.
That's right.
So maybe he said, oh, make him look like this or something like that.
Well, who it knows? Could be that our game is conflating, like I Scott yeah. thought, maybe. Like okay. the Gog and Magog, they're kind of the same. I'm even... Yeah. Even, I mean, when he announces his name, Gog and Magog is basically, I'm Gog, son of God. So, and they were like in the Bible too, conflated in a lot of ways. They were yeah. often, they were indistinct from each other in a lot of ways.
Okay. Perfect then.
Yeah. Yeah.
It could also so, just be that Gog's grown up to look much, very much like his father.
Could be.
Yep.
True. But no one called his dad Pup. Tell you that.
That's right.
So yeah, I just was like really interested because of just the name. Like Magog is an ancient name, like Nimrod. Like, you know, like all, it just was really cool.
Yeah, that's great. That was a good history.
Yeah, and the idea of Magog representing like opposition and villainy, just because it's a different tribe kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, like I feel like that resonates right. So a lot of these. Heroes, you know, it's like if you're not with us, you're against us.
Very much the pulse of the other.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. But in terms of finding something interesting about Magog to like identify with, it's not there in this one, guys.
Well, you're kind of cute and little, Daniel. So, well, that's I can identify.
I appreciate that, Steve. Yeah, thank you.
No problem.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was good.
So that's Pup. As with all my origin stories, I invite Scarlet Brody to come on and correct it.
Okay. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at these cards, but we're going to do something a little different for the Mojo Mania villains. We are going to only do a single show. We're not going to do a two-parter. Crazy, ooh. Right?
What?
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to look at all this? Of Magog tonight. Because
wow.
this, I mean, okay, so these cards come in the Mojo Scenario Pack. There's only 12 total cards, and four of them are set up, right? So there's only 8 encounter cards, 7 by title. So to do two parts would kind of be overkill. So we're gonna give you a special Gog and Magog all at once. Okay, so what we're going to do now is we're going to take a look at the cards, and we are doing everything crazy tonight because we are not going to talk about the villain first. What we want to do is we want to talk a little bit about the setup for this scenario because it is so unique, and it'll make more sense if we work through some of the main schemes first, and we'll circle back to Magog when it's time.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's actually a brilliant idea.
It is a brilliant idea. I'm glad I came up with it and it wasn't Daniel's. Okay.
Take it away, brilliant leader.
Yes. Scott can stay. all right. So the main scheme 1A is Melee in the Mojoseum. So we're going to start with Magog A or Magog B instead for Expert. We're going to play with the Magog and Standard encounter sets and one modular encounter set. One random modular set from the Mojo Mania scenario pack is what they suggest. So all of our Mojo television episodes have been talking about those random modular sets, right? Sitcom, fantasy, sci-fi, Western, crime, and horror. Yeah, horror. Okay. So you're going to pick one of those randomly and play with that. And then setup, we're going to put the champion environment card and the challenger's environment card into play, each with its booing crowd side face up.
Boo!
Okay. So we're going to flip this to side 1B, and this will top out at 6 per player with a little star. Okay, it starts at 1 per player and goes up by 2 per player. Teleported into a bizarre arena, you must fight for the audience's entertainment and your lives. The players cannot win the game unless they wow the crowd as the challengers. And the forced interrupt, which is off the main scheme maxing out, when the scheme would be completed, place 2 per player rating counters on the champion and remove all threat from here instead. Okay, so you don't lose by threading out. Instead, the champion environment will get 2 counters per player, which is going to be your loss condition. That we'll get to, I guess.
True to a classic gladiator match, we have to woo the crowd.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Are you not entertained? You had to scream that over and over playing this too.
That's right.
Oh, we'll just have Russell Crowe shout it a few times.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Okay.
Is this not why you are here?
Are we allowed to do that? That'd be great.
Whatever. Scott, why don't you tell us all about this champion card?
All right. Let's talk about the champion. It's an environment card with the trait booing crowd on one side and cheering crowd on the other. If there are at least 5 per player ratings counters here, flip this environment without removing ratings counters, it says on the booing crowd. In this corner, we have your 99-time defending Mojoverse champion, the mighty Muggle! And the cheering crowd says, underdogs. It has a forced response. After the champion flips to this side, each player draws 1 card. If there are at least 10 ratings counters here per player, Magog wins again, and the players lose the game.
Okay. So it sits on the booing side. Somehow we're going to be putting rating counters here.
That's right.
Probably if the main scheme tops out or some other way, then it flips. And when it flips, the heroes get a bonus. It's like a little catch-up mechanic.
A little something. Yeah.
Look how fair we are as the villains, right? Like, how often would a hero actually do that for us?
Yeah, not that often. And then you don't remove the counters. So those 5 or plus counters that were on the booing side stay. Cheering side flips. Now once this gets to 10, Magog wins again. Notice, again, and the players lose the game. Yeah, because it'll
for
be
the 100th time.
Win. His 100th win. Time. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. But we know that there is a Challengers card as well. I guess, Daniel, that's you.
Apparently, it's Wolverine, is the single challenger. This is an environment with the booing crowd trait on one side and cheering crowd on the other, as Scott said, with the champions. Now, booing crowd. If there are at least 5 per player rating counters here, flip this environment without removing ratings counters. The players wow the crowd by placing ratings counters here. And in this corner, hailing from the tiny, insignificant planet of Earth, we have our challengers.
Ooh.
All right, so when they flip it to the cheering crowd, tag team, forced response. After the challengers flips to the side, search the encounter deck and discard pile for a surprise contender and put it into play, engage with the first player. If it is already in play, give it a tough status card.
Hmm.
Okay. Mm. If there are at least 10 per player ratings counters here, you wow the card and the players win the game.
Okay, so that's how you
win. It's all cool, Steve, but I don't understand how you even get ratings counters and all that stuff.
Yeah, that we don't know yet.
Hmm.
But it does say you win the game if you get those counters. I love the tag team. There's a, oh no, who's this guy? And there's prize contender joins. So that's great. They do give us something when they get a little bit of a head. They give us a third-party candidate. Okay. Well, we need a... I think now is the time.
Now it's time for Magog.
Magog, yes. Can you do Magog, though?
I will do Magog. So he's got an A and B side, depending on whether or not you're going expert. On standard, he is a brute with 1 scheme, 2 attack. And his attack comes with forced response. After Magog attacks and damages a character, place 1 ratings counter on the champion.
Oh,
all right. So that's one way he does it. Okay. And a force interrupt when Magog would be defeated. Reset his hit points to 10 per player instead. Place 3 per player ratings counters on the challengers and deal each player 1 face down encounter card. Wow. And then the difference is with his expert side is he attacks for 3, still scheming for 1. When he damages a character on expert, he places 2 ratings counters on the champion. And when you beat him, you only get 2 rating counters per player instead of 3. But you still get that face-down encounter card.
Just a little bit less of an advantage.
Yeah, and both versions have 10 health
10 per player,
to start. Yep.
So there you have it. That's one way ratings counters get put on these cards. The other is the scenario. The scheme going will also give him ratings counters. So
yeah, so he attacks. He's going to attack most of the game, right?
Yep.
I mean, he is not stalwart or steady, so you could stun him, you could confuse him. But if he, all he has to do is damage a character. So if you chump block, if your defense is too low, if you just say, I take the damage, you're going to put 1 rating counter out there on the champion. So after 5 hits in a solo game, after 5 attacks, it's going to advance. The champion is going to flip. So that's all he needs is to punch someone 5 times.
Surely there's going to be ways where he activates more than
standard.
Once a turn.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure.
Well, expert's even worse, right, Scott? I mean, he's putting 2 counters on and his attack is higher. So it's even harder to defend against. Yeah.
And you get less for beating him up.
So you have to, at this point, beat him up. Like, let's just talk solo. You have to beat him up twice in order to flip the challenger's card, not looking at anything else on the board. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
Okay. But in expert, you got to beat him 3 times. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Although actually winning takes beating him 4 times, if that's the only way that you're putting counters on your card, right? Because the math is kind of odd. It's a difference between
4 and 5. Yeah, it is weird, right? How they do that.
Yeah. That's why you're not removing any of the counters when you flip them. I'm just thinking of how you get ahead, you know, to the cheering crowd kind of thing. But yeah, you're right. And his scheme isn't so high, but I mean, 6, like in a solo game, you know, the main scheme puts 2 per player out. So even if it starts at 0, you're putting 2 on, you're putting 1 for his base stat. So it's already at a 3. You could conceivably, you know, draw 3 boost. We'll see if there are any 3 boosts where it would immediately advance the main scheme. So,
yeah, it goes up pretty fast.
Yeah, there's not a lot of wiggle room for him. So,
that's good. But he comes with other stuff.
Yeah, he comes with other stuff. That's the setup. That is how
that's the push and pull of this scenario.
Right. But now we get the wild cards and the fun bits and pieces. So, Scott, why don't you read the next card there?
Surge of Aggression. So, Surge of Aggression is an attachment, a condition that is attached to Magog. It has a forced response. After Magog's hit points are reset, place 1 per player ratings counters on the challengers and discard this card. It gives him +1 scheme, +1 attack. It has no boost icons, but it does have a special effect, which is to reveal this card. So this one's going to up his scheme. It's going to up his attack and make it more likely that he can put threat or put points on his counters. But once you defeat him, you're going to get counters back.
Yeah, you get a bigger reward.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, so the flavor text is, "Stand still so I can crush you."
So good.
Clearly, he's hoping that that his opponent will give him a little bit of an edge, so that he can truly defeat his enemy. Which I think makes sense because he's particularly weak against protection and the ability to avoid his damage. So maybe aptly spoken.
Okay, so he has a Surge of Aggression, but he also has an attachment called Jolt of Adrenaline, which is a condition attachment attached to Magog. Magog gains Retaliate and Stalwart. Okay, there we go. Forced response after Magog's hit points are reset, place one per player ratings counters on the challengers and discard this card. With the special boost, reveal this card. Okay, he gets Retaliate, Stalwart, and if you defeat him, you get a bigger reward.
I love these two cards. I think they're clever.
Me too. I love the art on Jolt of Adrenaline, because the suggestion here is that Shadowcat literally phasing through his heart is just like a like coffee in the morning for my god.
Yeah. Yeah, those are great attachments. But you remember how we made mention of something called the Surprise Contender?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that almost makes this scenario unfair. But anyway, here's the Surprise Contender. He is a unique minion with one scheme to attack with an asterisk. He's clone and elite traded. Villainous keyword. When he attacks, after he attacks and damages a character, place a ratings counter on the champion. Okay? So that's just like Magog. And yeah. When defeated, though, place two per player ratings counters on the challengers, three boost. But guys, I forgot the best part.
Oh, what's
Seven hit points per player.
Yeah, he's almost as big as Magog. I mean, Magog's a 10, right? Yeah.
I only just now noticed it has the clone trait. That he is a clone.
Yeah.
Clone of
I don't know how I missed that before. Yeah, he's a clone of Magog.
Yeah.
He's dressed very differently, but that's cool.
He certainly is.
Now, that is comic book art, so I wonder what it's from.
Mojo's in the back. It's got to be a Mojo show. Mojo issue.
Yeah, well, so is Jolt of Adrenaline.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, Surprise Contenders, 3-point different from Magog himself. The stats, I mean, on standard, it's a 1-2. It's the exact same stats. Villainous is still getting a boost card.
Yeah.
And has effectively the same effect.
And
right?
he comes out automatically at 1 point.
Are you not entertained?
So,
are you not entertained? Yep.
That's just mean.
And if he's already out, he gets a tough status card.
Right. And he would be out already because you flipped him as an encounter card. Right?
Right.
Yeah, he could come out turn one.
It's not like he starts the game out of play.
No, you can totally just draw him.
So there's plenty of Magog times I've played where I fought Surprise Contender twice.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And then I only did that because I didn't know any better. And I think it makes more sense to just kind of leave him out.
Yeah, if he comes out early, try to flip the challengers beforehand. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah,
I mean, I think you should just leave him out and play. Whatever. But
yeah, he goes from Surprise Contender to Contender.
Yeah.
But seeing that off the encounter deck, if you've never played this game and you don't look through your cards first, like I play everything blind first time. Like I don't look at what's in the encounter deck. I don't do that. And when this thing popped out, like turn two. I'm like, this must be from the wrong set. This can't.
This is a clone of the villain. What's going on?
Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, this is something. So yeah, he's a great. I guess they need him in this scenario, but.
I mean, he is the only minion, not based on whatever modular set you're going to play with.
Sure.
Okay, Scott. Next card is all yours.
All right. Let's break a leg. We're on TV. It's a treachery. When revealed, you are stunned. I love that the picture here is this Beast?
It's Beast,
it looks like Beast, who has broken his leg here. You are stunned when revealed. Take 2 damage, 4 damage instead, if there are more ratings counters on the challengers than on the champion. You may place any number of ratings counters on the champion to reduce this damage by 1 for each counter placed this way.
Oh,
this is truly, it is so cinematic that they put all that into that card, in my opinion. Like it's just like playing to the crowd, right? Like he's got his injury and like, you can make it less of an injury, but the crowd likes it more, right? Like, or you can just take the hit. It's pretty vicious though. Getting this, you're stunned. You're not going to be able to attack. Magog is basically stalling you out and giving himself more opportunities to attack you. and this can be a lot of damage, right? Like, it doesn't say your hero takes 2 damage, 4 damage instead. You, in Alter Ego, you still take the damage, right?
Yeah,
so if you flip
indirect,
down to healing,
either.
You haven't healed yet. It's not indirect. Yeah, you can't put it on an ally. You take the damage. So you might be in a position where you have to put those counters on the champion in order to not lose the game.
And I like that it goes with the theme of the whole set of balancing, right? So, like, if you're winning, it hurts worse.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Right? So I do like that.
And he's got 2 boost icons. So even when it comes down to the boost effect, it hurts.
Yeah. If you are up enough and the champ, I mean, there is a point where you could reduce the damage by putting 1 or 2 counters on the champion in order to flip it, in order to get
that
card draw, right? There is a way that those heroes can cheat that, sort of, like, if it's close. So there are some scenarios that are going to be kind of like, you know, maybe the crowd's like, "Ooh," and some odd thing happens, but you could, you know, "Oh, I'm going to take 1. I'm going to get to draw a card. I'm already up pretty far," that kind of thing. So
this is why you're the master villain, because I would never have thought to have gamed the system with a card like that.
Yeah, of course.
That's Steve cool, for you.
Yep.
Really an understudy.
Yeah. I love the alien people that are watching the TV. It's like a mom and dad with their little kid. And they're watching.
Yeah, it is.
Saturday night, you know, whatever's on Mojo TV. So that's cool.
Well, keep going, Steve.
All right, we're going to defend the title. And there are 2 of these in the deck. It's the only card that's duplicated. It is a treachery. When revealed, Alter Ego, place 2 rating counters on the champion. Boom. There you go. When revealed, hero, Magog attacks you. If a hero defends against this attack and takes no damage, place 2 rating counters on the challengers. And 1 boost icon. With the quote, here it is. Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?
There it is.
All right. Love it.
Yeah. Just straight up 2 goes on the champion. If you're an alter ego, you're hiding out. Or he attacks you, which means he might put rating counters on the champion as well if he damages you. But if you are able to suck up that attack and not take any damage, the challengers get to get a reward because, you know, they win that round. So
that's right.
Yeah, it's pretty flavorful. So
it is. Yeah. This is probably one of the most thematic and flavorful sets, in my opinion.
I think you're right.
It's very, like, heavy on the flavor. And the art is just phenomenal. It's very colorful.
But the neat thing of the flavor on this set is you don't really need to know anything about it other than it's a gladiator fight, right?
Yeah.
And if you're playing this game, you're kind of a nerd. You don't need to be explained what's a gladiatorial fight, right? You just get it. It's a thing that just exists and you're good to go. So you don't need to know, well, such and such or so-and does this or, yeah, that kind of thing. So.
Well, all right. We still got more cards, though. We'll talk about what we think about this in a second here. But first, we have Stage Fright. This is a treachery. When revealed, you are confused. Place 2 threat on the main scheme. 4 instead, if there are more ratings counters on the challengers than on the champion. And this has a special boost effect. You are confused. So you're not getting away from confusion.
And you can't reduce the threat that goes on like you could with Break a Leg.
Yeah.
Right.
It just the threat's going on. It's going on.
Okay.
I like it. Okay. Simple. Not much to say about it. It goes with Break a Leg, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other half. All right, Scott. Pump the crowd up for us, would you?
All right. There is a side scheme in this encounter set, and that side scheme is Pump Up the Crowd. It's a side scheme that when revealed, if the champion is on its cheering side, we're going to place an additional 1 per player threat on the side scheme. It starts with 4 threat per player and has 2 acceleration icons on it.
Oof.
With a when defeated effect that when it's defeated, we're going to place 1 per player ratings counter on the challenger. So when it enters play, the stronger the champion's doing, the harder it's going to be to get the crowd pumped up in your favor, right? Because here, Magog has been pumping up the crowd in his favor. But if you manage to pull it off, you're gonna get the crowd back in your favor and get those ratings. So again, very, very thematic. I love that it has both a when revealed and a when defeated effect.
And three boost icons too.
And three boost icons.
Yeah. Yeah.
And two accelerations. Like you really can't. I think
you cannot ignore it in a solo game at all. Even in a four player game, you can't really. But in a four player game, it could have 20 threat on it.
It could.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot of threat. It can be a lot of threat to remove. I think it's not so bad in solo, but I don't love that you kind of want to remove it because it helps you when you remove it. And you also want to get rid of its negative effect. I kind of wish the when defeated had some kind of alternative negative effect and not just a positive one for the challengers, but it does make sense. You've kind of got this back and forth of the crowd raging, and it's the theme is on point for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even in solo, four threat on a scheme is going to take some attention with the main scheme being what it is. You kind of have to get rid of it. I feel like almost, I always feel like, oh geez, this has got to go. Plus you get the bonus of the rating counter. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, you can't leave it. If you leave it, like you're going to be at the start of the villain phase.
Two rounds, you're done.
Four out of six. Yeah. Like, you can't.
Yeah. Yep.
But you know, when I'm in a four player game, I don't look too much at acceleration tokens.
That's true.
To be honest. So,
but
sadly they don't scale, but.
But the main scheme is going up by two per player, and this is adding another two. So in a four-player game, you're still putting out six threat around.
I'm not saying it's not one, great.
That's 25% of
you're putting out 10 threat per round.
10 threat around. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's a lot of threat. Yeah. It's great. I love it. Lots of threat. Haha. The crowd is interesting. It's like my nightmares from Zoom. Zoom meetings. So, yeah,
it hits different in the post-COVID world.
It definitely does.
Jesus,
yeah.
I'm sure that's where these two artists drew their inspiration, though.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Javier Mena and Pasquale.
No one's terrifying. All these Zoom meetings I had to have.
What if this were all on Zoom?
Yeah.
Yikes.
Okay, that's all of the cards.
Steve, is that the smallest encounter set for a villain we have?
It is pretty darn close. I mean, there's only 12 total cards, and that includes the villain, the main scheme, and two environment cards.
In the encounter deck are six cards? Is that right? No, seven.
It's eight.
But eight seven by title. Yep.
Yeah, the collector two might be smaller, right?
Ooh, maybe.
But then the encounter deck itself is tiny.
It is. Right. He blows through it fast because he just gets one modular.
Standard and then one. And those have been like what, six cards?
Six cards for the most part. Yep.
So that's 13 plus eight is a 21 card deck.
Yep. Plus your obligation. So 22.
So you're going through that in a four player game in a turn. So that's another thing to think about too, like the acceleration tokens ramping up that way.
You really can't wait too long anyways, because every time he hits you, he's putting rating counters out. It's not one of these games where you can let it drag on and on and on and on anyways, where you got to hit him and get in and get out.
You can't dawdle for
many
setup.
Reasons. Yeah.
Right. No, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. He puts a clock on the game. He's a very difficult one to like play a long game and try to win it out, you know, after everybody's set up super well. You'll lose before you get a chance to get everything under control and set up the way you want. It's very nice pacing, I think.
Oh, I think it feels like a fight. I mean, this is it. Like out of all of them, there's no scheme. The scheme is, I'm going to punch you. And because I want to win, I'm a gladiator. Right. Like,
just a brawl.
That's it.
It's just a straight up boss fight. No illusions that it's anything else. He's not robbing somebody. He's not breaking and taking anything.
Breaking and taking, right?
Nope. He's just breaking you and taking his championship, I guess.
That's right.
So let's talk options here, because when we had our 200th and we were discussing our favorites and our not favorites, I put this lower on my list because I didn't feel like you could customize it. And I see that I am wrong. Not that I'm admitting it. I would never do such a thing.
Wrong.
You are not required to use a random modular set from Mojo Mania in this. I thought it was required, but it just is suggested that you're using a random one for Mojo Mania. So that puts Magog, I lift him out of the lower levels for me because I can customize it without having to do anything extra. So do you guys have any of modular sets other than the Mojo Mania ones that you think work well in this?
I've only played it with the Mojo Mania stuff. Scott, what about you? Have you gone a field from the Mojo Mania?
You know, I don't know. I think last time I played Mojo, I threw in some modulars. I played with some different ones with him. I might have put Juggernaut in there. I might have put in the Reavers.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Pre-teamwork Karada.
I think I hadn't thought about it, but I think putting the Under Attack with a Vibranium Armor and
the upgrades.
The upgrades and the boost effect, the Concussive Blast that can like ping off tough as a boost so that it's harder. And I think that would be really cool, putting in some of the ones that give him more upgrades so that he's hitting harder. Or even like the Experimental Weapons maybe deck, adding that in there.
That's pretty tiny too. So I'm thinking now of like Power Drain, where you burn through the encounter deck accelerations, right? Or any set that is going to have a bunch of minions. Iron Spider, Sinister Six, Sinister Six. Any of those, because right now when you're fighting Magog, Surprise Contender, and you know, if you're playing Horror or Fantasy, those ones have minions in them, right? But like Crime doesn't. Sitcom doesn't. So there's a few of those that don't. So if you put something that's minion heavy, you have even more attack pressure on you.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to go back and play.
I would lean towards ones with guard minions, not just regular minions. Most of the modular sets from Mojo do not have guard. But if you threw in Legions of Hydra, like, one, it would feel like, you know, him pulling in, you know, you've got this almost like a staged battle between Hydra and, you know, whoever the enemy is. And you'd have all those guard minions slowing down your ability to get to Mojo and flip him and win quickly. I could see that being really tough.
Yeah. Yeah, guard's a good call. Or the Wrecking Crew. From the Hood, right? Those guys are
any brute.
That would be mean.
Get those brutes in there.
But this encounter deck is so small that I have no compunction for throwing in 2-3 modular sets in something like this.
No. I think just one. What's the one with Dr. Hyde and Calvin Zebo?
Yeah.
Because that one has the side scheme that when a brute would take it goes on the side scheme instead, right?
Does it go on there or do you get to pull it off of there or something like that? But yeah,
maybe the other way around.
Yeah, it might be better for him. But still, anything that would trigger a brute attack. Yeah, so there's definitely some options here. I'd love to hear what the listeners like to use if they play Magog outside of the Mojo Mania scenarios.
And if you haven't, you should.
Yeah, definitely.
Tell us what worked.
So is there more to say about this opening scenario from the Mojo Mania scenario pack? Daniel,
I think it's super cool. I really like it. Like his particular encounter set, yeah, it drips with theme and is on point. It's really good. And I like the push and pull of the scenario itself too. I like the two environments. Mm-hmm. with every punch the crowd roars louder for your side. I just think it's good.
Yeah.
It's fun to play and it's easy one to visualize, kind of, you know, like as you're playing.
It's funny because sometimes the complaint you hear is like, oh, Marvel's just beat up the villain or whatever. This one is just beat up the villain, but it just feels great. Not that you're beating up the villain, but you know, it's just a slugfest. I should say that differently. But
yeah, like, no, you're right.
Sometimes it's like you just punch things in this game, you're like, yeah. But this one, you're like, yeah, I'm going to punch things. It's like,
and the crowd loves it.
Yeah.
Just trading blows back and forth.
What does it say about society that we love the bloodlust in this one?
But there you go.
That's right.
I guess that's a question for Mustafa. Scott, what do you got any other thoughts on this?
I mean, I'm with Daniel. I absolutely love it. I think it's a great way to start off the Mojo pack because it is so high energy and just really, really fun, like you said. I think it's the right amount of fiddly, too. Like, it's not, you have the environments, but you're not having to mess with them a ton, right? You're just putting counters on them. And so you have that extra stuff going on, but it's not like a brain drain on the game when you're playing. It's just stuff going on. It really captures that feel of the crowd getting excited without having to feel like you have to mess around with a bunch of stuff. So it's really fast to set up, and it's really easy to play. And I think the difficulty is in a sweet spot because solo, it's not necessarily hard to win, especially on standard, in my opinion, because you can do a lot of damage fairly quickly, and you can win before he does you a bunch of damage, especially if you're careful about when you flip to the challenger mode and get that surprise contender. It's not, in my experience, it's pretty easy to reliably win in standard. But when you get more players, it actually gets a lot harder. Like, the more of a brawl it is, I think the harder this set can be. So there's a lot of space for your game to be not too bad or really hard to win. So it has a nice range, even though you've only got an A side and a B side. They really change the game a lot going from standard to expert.
To comment on your fiddliness, I think what makes it not feel so fiddly too is when you're dealing with the challenger and the champion, a card very specifically says do this when you've just done something, right? It's like,
right,
there's a star next to the attack, or you've beaten the card. You're not like looking back for a forced response or an interrupt somewhere. It's like, this thing, I'm still in this one specific action, and it tells me do this now as part of that action. Right. So you don't have to go, oh shoot, I was supposed to put two tokens on because this card's way over here and I didn't see it. That kind of thing doesn't happen.
Yeah. And what you see is what you get, right? It's not like Mystique, where you're like, or Mysterio, right? Where you're shuffling stuff into different places and, or even like Loki, where again, you're like having to pull stuff out all the time and shuffle the encounter deck and get something else. You don't have all that. It's like, no, you just draw a card and you put it in front of you. And like, that's the card you get, and it's out. And then it goes to the discard pile. Like, everything is very straightforward, which is 100% on theme for Magog. Like, I mean, the guy's not the craftiest, you know, screw in the bucket.
Well, I mean, he does become a cute little pup in order to capture Longshot.
That is true. We are missing that theme.
This is post schemer Magog.
Yeah.
When he's fully
that Magog embraced. Got blown up.
Yeah. Yeah. When he's fully embraced.
We need custom pup modular set to play with this.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
You're on a scheme.
Yep. Yep. That'd be
That's
great.
all about threat.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we normally give these a ranking, you know, but I think we have to give it like a emperor watching a gladiator fight with the thumb thing, right? Is that what they do? Sorry. What do we got? Thumbs up, thumbs down. I don't know which is good for our guys.
Two thumbs up from this emperor.
Okay. So, Scott?
I wouldn't deign to be an emperor, but from this lowly senator... you get two thumbs up.
Okay. Yeah. I'll also give it two thumbs up. I think that's the way we would rank it as a villain. So, okay. Because then a thumbs down, we were supposed to kill the guy. That feels more villainous.
That's right.
But, okay.
Steve, I like that you've come around on this because I was surprised when you rated this one low. Because of the three in the box, this one's my favorite, I think.
Yeah, I think I just totally... forgot.
You thought you were shoehorned into the box.
I was forced to use it, and I didn't want to do that, and I don't need to. So, yeah, I'm pulling it back up out of the bottom. So,
good.
All right. Well, Scott, thanks so much for coming on. Thanks for all you've been
contributing
in the conversations and on Twitch with me, and hopefully we'll have you back again. And
I would love that.
Right?
Indeed.
It's my joy. To smell the sweet smells of the secret lair.
Yeah, can you find out what that is? anyhow, tell us, I want to hear from the listeners, what modular set or sets work really well on this and change it up, and why? Please email us. You can do so at criticalencounterspod@gmail.com. We are Critical Encounters on Facebook. You can find our YouTube, our Twitch, or Patreon by searching for Critical Encounters Podcast. And on Discord, we are Vardane, Big Foam Loaf, Wandering Took, and Lexicon. If you like our show, tell your friends. If you don't like our show, tell your enemies. Magog, take us out.
Do you smell what Magog is cooking?
Are you not entertained? Is this not why you are here?